Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, chapter 5, entitled The Activities of Shakshi Gopal. It's quite a long chapter, actually. So yesterday, Atmanivedana Maharaj gave a very nice class. And he, at the end, he said to me, he said, this Shakshi Gopal chapter is very long. So anyway, the Lord's pastimes are transcendental. So have a long... They're there for our benefit, and the Lord's pastimes are beneficial for the conditioned soul. So, even if they're short or long, you know. Okay, so let me take. Where did I just put my glasses down somewhere? Okay, so I'll just read the English until the. We come to 119. The Lord continued, I have become very much pleased by the truthfulness of you both. Now you can ask for a benediction. Thus, with great pleasure, the two Brahmins begged for a benediction. The Brahmin said, please remain here so that people all over the world will know how merciful you are to your servants. Lord Gopal stayed and the two Brahmins engaged in his service. After hearing of the incident, many people from different countries began to come and see Gopal. Text 117. Eventually, the king of that country heard this wonderful story and he also came to see Gopal and thus became very satisfied. The king constructed a nice temple and regular service was executed. Gopal became very famous under the name of Shakshi Gopal as the witness. Okay, so we'll come to this one, so we'll recite that one together. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thus, Shakshi Gopal stayed in Vidyanagara and accepted service for a very long time. Purport. The city of Vidyanagara is situated in Trailanga Desh, South India, on the banks of the river Godavari. The place where the Godavari flows into the Bay of Bengal is called Kota Desh. The Orissa kingdom was very powerful and Kota Desh was the capital of Orissa. It was then known as Vidyanagara. Formerly, this city was situated on the southern side of the river Godavari. At that time, King Purushottam Dev managed to control Orissa and appoint a government. The present city of Vidyanagara is on the southeastern side of the river, only 20 or 25 miles from Rajamahendri. During the time of Maharaj Pataprudra, Sri Ramananda Rai was a governor there. Vijayanagara is not identical with Vidyanagara. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukum karoti vachalam bangum langayate girim yad kripatamaham bande ti gurum dinatarinam vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in this particular pastime we've heard a lot about the young Brahman and the elderly Brahman and the goings-on, so to speak. So the elderly Brahmana was on pilgrimage with the young Brahmana assisting him. And then by rendering such wonderful service to the elderly Brahmana, he became very satisfied and he offered the hand of his daughter in marriage to the young Brahman. But the young Brahman, he was not from a very wealthy family, and he was thinking, well, the elderly Brahman may agree to give the hand of his daughter, but when he gets home, then his relatives and family may actually not be too happy about that. So he said to the elderly Brahman, well, if you really want to make this commitment to me, then speak this in front of the deity Gopal, you know, then Gopal can be a witness if they move the goalposts later on, you know, so to speak, you know. So moving the goalposts means that you say one thing and then later you say, well, I don't quite remember that, you know. So I think some of our politicians are very good at that, you know, and that they're very good at U-turns and moving the goalposts, you know. So me and Sankirtan Priya were going for a japa walk in the village, and we saw this football post, but they had wheels on, you know. So we thought that they probably moved the goalposts, you know. So anyway, so Shakshi Gopal was the witness, and as it happened, then especially the son of the Brahmin, the elderly Brahmin, and his wife, they were becoming very enraged, and the wife was threatening to commit suicide if you give my daughter to this, you know, young Brahman who's, you know, not from a very wealthy family or very, they weren't very impressed with him. But the point was, he may not have been materially very, very advanced, but the elderly Brahman saw amazing spiritual qualities within that person, and he thought that actually he would be a great guide and shelter for his daughter, that his very beloved daughter. So then it went on. So the Lord continued, "I have become very much pleased by the truthfulness of you both. Now you can ask for a benediction." And with great pleasure, the two Brahmins begged for a benediction. So the Lord said to the Brahmins, because they maintained what they said, and one of the Brahminical qualities is satyam, you know, it's a very important aspect, you know, to be honest, you know. So then the Lord gave them a benediction. So many people, if they're given a benediction, they will choose something mundane, you know. Some will say, well, you know, I want a very healthy bank balance, you know. That's quite a popular benediction that people are after, you know. Or some people will say, oh, you know, I want to become famous, or I want to, you know, be very powerful, I want so many opulences, or whatever. But those things are all temporary and they're material. So these two Brahmins, it's very interesting what they ask for. So let's see. These two Brahmins, well, they asked the Lord that, please, that you've come, you've walked all the way here from Vrindavan, so please, you reside here, you stay here, and allow us to worship you. You know? So, because they became attached to the Lord, that this, the Supreme Personality of God are there. The Lord, he fulfilled their desire, and he stayed in that place, and the elderly Brahman and the young Brahman and his newly married wife, they actually performed the service there. So it's explained that, like Srila Prabhupada was explaining, that this originally the deity was in Vidyanagar, which is in South India. But later on, there was a king from Orissa, and he conquered that kingdom. So then later he took the deity to Cuttack. So that deity is now in Cuttack, the Shakshi Gopal deity. So if any of you want to go and see him, take darshan of him, then you can see him in the place of Cuttack. So I think... it's really, really important that the Brahman, like I explained in a previous class, that a Brahman, sometimes, you get these kind of cheap Brahmins, you know. So if you're born in the family of a Brahmin, then they say, well, I'm a Brahmin, so, you know, I'm of the higher caste, and therefore I should be respected, you know. And also some of them, they have a condescending attitude, you know. So if anyone doesn't know what a condescending attitude means, it means that you look down on others, you know, like that. Or you look down on those that are less privileged. You know? But actually, it's explained that a Brahmin, a learned person, he sees with equal vision, you know. A cow, a Brahmin, a dog, or even any living entity, sees them equally because he sees on the platform of spirit, soul. Whereas if you people who are not so learned and don't have that spiritual understanding, then they just judge from externals, you know. So sometimes if you wear a nice suit, you know, and if you drive a nice car, you know, and then you know someone sees you, they think, oh yeah, this is a very respectable person, you know? This is a very, you know, they're of high standing, from high status, you know. That it's like, but actually anybody could get a suit, you know, or hire a nice car, you know. But actually, what are their qualities, you know? So are they honest? Are they clean? Are they forgiving? Are they merciful? Do they have control over their mind and senses? And are they compassionate, you know? They have so many wonderful qualities, godly qualities. Are those qualities manifest in the person of that individual? Otherwise, from externals, you know, like someone may see someone is not dressed so, you know, eloquently, you know. He may be dressed in simple clothing, or he may be dressed in some of the villagers, they think, oh, you know, these guys, they're dressed in a cloth or a pair of curtains or something, you know. So yeah, people they judge by that, you know. Like some people meet, they're like, oh, you know, what's that mark on your nose, and why you what's this thing you're wearing, you know, like that. So they're not sure about that. But actually, sometimes when they get to speak to the devotees, they think, oh, actually, my first impressions were wrong, you know. My first impressions were wrong. I was thinking, just judging from the external. So I've done that so many times, you know, especially on Sankirtan, on book distribution. I've been thinking, oh, you know, this person, you know, he's got a leather jacket and metal studs and chains and tattoos and things. I think, oh, I better not stop him in case he punches me in the nose. You know, you know? And then I'm thinking, oh, this person, you know, he or she looks very well dressed, and they must be, you know, very high caliber people, you know. But when you stop them and you actually speak to them, you may get a different response, you know. Some of the so-called high-caliber people, they don't speak so many nice words, you know. It's like verbal diarrhea, you know. And some of the rough people as well, actually some of them I've noticed are actually quite honest, you know. So then I was saying to myself on Sankirtan, well, you know, don't decide for them. My duty is just to give everyone an opportunity to take Krishna consciousness. So whether they look like, you know, big and rough, and I'm worried that they might punch me, or if I tell them to, if I ask them to take a book, or if they look so-called, you know, exquisite, you know, it's not necessarily the case that they will be of good qualities, you know. So I was thinking, well, okay, let me just approach everyone. Let me just pray. Let me chant. Let me ask Krishna to just let me be an instrument and engage everyone in service. And then just approach everyone. And then at least I give them the opportunity, regardless of how they look, what they're wearing, or how, you know, rough or, you know, eloquent they look, you know. My duty is to give them an opportunity, but then it's between them and Krishna. Yeah. So I found actually that was a much better method, because then I wasn't deciding for them, you know. I wasn't playing God, you know. So I just talk, a postman, his job is to just post the letters, not to decide, well, I don't like the color of the door, you know. They don't have a nice garden, I don't think I'll give them their letter. You know? So it's like, his job is just, to get the letters and put them into the letter boxes of the right addresses, you know. It's quite simple, you know. So we're devotees, and we have to approach people and be non-judgmental. And actually, Krishna, it's really, really amazing how it works. That also, like, I've been like visiting houses and businesses, and sometimes you go to a place, it's like really big, you know, and it has electric gates and a big driveway and, you know, very opulent place. But actually, some of the people, they're very low-class people, you know. They have no respect. They have no self-respect. Therefore, they have no respect for anyone else. And some people I've been to, like, some houses, like the very, very poor people, sometimes, you know, I've been to houses where they don't even have any carpet or any line, or just bare floorboards, you know, and they're just somehow making ends meet. But some of those people actually have such a big heart, you know, they welcome you, and they don't have much, but they share whatever they have, you know. So then they say, Krishna doesn't see what you give, he sees what you hold back, you know. So that's very, very interesting. So they say you should never judge a book by its cover, you know. So don't judge someone from the externals, you know. So I mean, because we get conditioned, you know, we think, oh, if somebody's got a nice car, or if they're dressed nicely, or they live in a posh area, then they're upmarket, you know. And not necessarily, you know. According to these transcendental teachings, upmarket means that they have divine qualities, you know. So divine qualities are very, 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 very important. So I was remembering, in this particular chapter, it's the activities of the deity Gopal, and he's coming, and then he's established, he's bearing witness, and then also he's giving benedictions, and then he's residing there in one place there, and then the devotees there are worshipping him. So I remember, I think it was 1984, and I was doing door-to-door Sankirtan in East London. And that time we had this, we had like sets of Srimad Bhagavatam, but what they had done is they had broken up lots of sets of the big Bhagavatams and given us lots of individual books rather than the full set. So we were just knocking on doors and saying, hello, good afternoon or good evening, Hare Krishna. We're from the Hare Krishna temple, and we've got these nice books, and we're just giving everyone an opportunity to take a book, and we were telling them something about Krishna, and giving everybody a chance to do some service. So I knocked on this one door, and this Indian man, gentleman, he came to the door, and I said, we're from Hare Krishna temple in Watford. So he said, oh, Hare Krishna, come in. So he invited me into his house. So I thought, okay, it seems like a cultured gentleman, maybe, you know, he'll give a donation and take a book. And I asked him his name. He said, my name is Mr. Goyal, you know. So as I was speaking to him, he said, Swami Prabhupada, he came to my house. You know? He said, oh, I said, really? He said, I gave him a Radha Krishna deity set, you know. I had a book in my bag, which was the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And at that time, that second canto had Radha Landanishwar on the front cover, you know. So I said, well, you know, you better have this book then. So he said, oh yeah, those are the deities. So of course, the story that he gave was slightly different from the one that's in the Leela Amrita by Satsarup Goswami. He said, well, Swami Prabhupada came and he wanted to establish his Radha Krishna temple, and I donated the deities, you know, Radha Landanishwar. So I don't know if any of you know the pastime. Maybe some of you know the pastime. But Srila Prabhupada was working with the devotees who had come, Shamasundar, Mukunda, Gurudas, and their wives, and a few devotees who had joined at Berry Place Temple. So there was no deities there, and Shamasundar Prabhu had been working day and night to convert this building into a beautiful temple. And he was using, I think, redwood, Californian redwood, you know. And it was, I don't know, any of you been to Berry Place? No? Okay. So Atmanivedana Maharaj had been there, and I think Shruti Prabhu had been there. So it was a beautiful temple. So, but that time, Prabhupada was like pushing the devotees, okay, we get this temple, you know, get the, he even set a date for the opening, but there was no deities. So he gave them a task, because he sent them a letter saying, okay, the opening of the temple is going to be on this date, so somehow you find Radha Krishna deities. So Mukunda Maharaj was like, oh my God, he said, you know, just to get the opening ready on time, that's such a big task in itself. You know, there was only a handful of devotees, and they didn't have much funds, they didn't have much finances, and they were struggling. And then, where do we get big Radha Krishna deities from? It's like, you know, so they were putting messages out and contacting anyone that they knew, and, you know, and Malati was sitting by the phone, you know, because they didn't have mobile phones, and so that landline. Shishiri Radha Gokulananda ji ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gaur Nithai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So then somehow or other, the date was getting closer of the opening, and there was no deities. And then someone from somewhere, they rang Malati and they said, oh, there's this, in East London, there's a Hindu society, and they have ordered some Radha Krishna deities to install in their temple. And their temple was in Cedar Road in Forest Gate, you know. I think it's East 7, you know, Forest Gate. Yeah. And but Radha London Ishwar played a trick. They played a trick to fulfill Prabhupada's desire, and also make the arrangement that they could go. So this Hindu society had ordered deities from India, and the deities had arrived, but what happened was there was a slight chip on Srimati Radharani's finger, on a little finger. There was some chip that something had come off, you know. So they, according to the Hindu custom, and they were thinking, oh, you know, if the date is, if there's even a little chip or there's one, something is broken, or we can't install them, you know, we have to, you know, this is, we have to send for more deities and things like that. So, so they were all like really a bit mental. They were thinking, oh, we brought all these deities, put so much money into it, and this and that. And they were saying, oh, but there's a chip, what should we do, you know. So then Mr. Goyal was keeping these Radha Krishna deities in his house, and he had them in his front room under a big cloth. So somehow or other, the devotees found out that they were there. So when they found out, they told Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was here. So Srila Prabhupada said, okay, let's go, let's go. So they jumped in a van. It was a rickety old van, you know, and they drove all the way to Mr. Goyal's house in East London. And they went, and Srila Prabhupada was there. I think Tamal Krishna Maharaj, maybe Shamasundar was there, and Mukunda Maharaj was there, a few others. Maybe Jamuna Mataji was there as well. So, she didn't come with them, but she was around at the time. So Mr. Goyal invited them in. Oh, Swamiji, because, oh, you know, great, Swami has come. He was very respectful. So, and he said, oh, Swamiji, do you want to see the Radha Krishna deities? And Prabhupada said, no, don't worry about the deities. Let's just talk, you know. So Prabhupada was just talking about family. You know this pastime, huh? So Prabhupada was just talking. He said, how are you about your family and this, and, you know, bring your children and this, what are their names and this and that. And he was saying, do you want to see the deities? And he said, yeah, we'll see the deities, but let's discuss some things, you know. So he kind of downplayed it, you know. Prabhupada was very clever. So then, Then he said, the man said, oh, you must see the deities. So he took the cover off. It was beautiful deities, rather than Nishwar deities. You know? And Radharani had a chip of marble that was missing from the finger, you know. So Srila Prabhupada said, actually, we have one very expert devotee, you know, who can fix, you know. He was talking about Mother Jamuna. And then he said to Mukunda Maharaj, and he, I think, I don't know, either Gurudas or Dhammakrishna Maharaj, he said, can you just see how heavy they are? So they're like, Krishna was really heavy, but they said, yeah, they're fine, you know, like they're struggling. And then, can you see how heavy Radharani is? And like that. So then, they picked him up, and then Prabhupada said, okay, let's go. But the man said, but it's a society, and, you know, we have to, like, make some. He said, yes, we will sort it out. And he said, then let's go. Then they walked out with the deities, and they put the deities in the van, and the guy was like, but, and then they drove off. So they drove, like, you know, for 5 minutes, and then Prabhupada said, stop the van. And then Prabhupada came out, they opened the doors of the van, and the devotees were holding, and then he offered his dandavats to the deities, you know. So that was like, it was, you know, Srimati Radharani's transcendental leela, you know, that those deities come, but the slight chip was missing from the finger. So, but that was because they wanted to be in Srila Prabhupada's temple. And Prabhupada, he must have known something, because he said, we're opening the temple at this date, and we have to get the deities, so you go and get the deities and make all the arrangements. The devotees were like, oh my God. You know? Somehow or other, it all came together. You know? Then Radhalan and Ishwar, you know, they were installed, and it was... in fact, during the ceremony, the installation ceremony, Prabhupada did something amazing as well, because there was bathing going on, but behind this kind of curtain, and then there was lots of guests there. BBC were there with their cameras rolling and everything. And then at one point, there was pillars that were holding part of a canopy. It kind of slipped. The pillar slipped, and Prabhupada just jumped up and he held the pillar, you know. An old man, you know, in his mid-70s, you know. He just jumped up. It was very heavy. So then eventually they took all these things out, and people outside were thinking that this is just part of the ceremony. So anyway, it went on. It was like really, really amazing. So so that was one pastime where Radha, Landanishwar, they actually manifest to fulfill the desire of the pure devotee, and they did it through different ways, through different means, you know. And it was like really, really special. So I was reading, there are so many pastimes with the deities. They're doing so many amazing things. Because sometimes people, they don't have faith, you know. And they say, oh, you know, what's Krishna going to do for me, you know, like that. So, but I just read about this pastime that happened in South Africa in a place called Cape Town. There was one young girl, she was 5 years old, and they weren't from an Indian family or anything, but they were visiting the ISKCON temple. And somehow this young girl, she was somehow so attracted to Lord Nrisingadev. You know, she just would just, you know, she says, oh, you know, this is the lion god, he's my friend, you know. And she was always like, all the time she just wanted to know about Lord Nrisingadev, and she was so attracted to Lord Nrisingadev. Just 5-year-old girl, and the parents were thinking, oh yeah, okay, you know, fine, you know. But one day she was just playing in the street, and with her ball, and her ball went into the road. So without looking, she just ran into the road to get her ball, but there was a big truck coming, and it was going fast. And the truck actually came, it hit her, and it knocked her up, and tossed her and threw her onto the ground. And the father happened to be looking out the window at that time. So it was like a little 5-year-old girl in a truck, big, massive truck, and it was going fast. was thinking, oh, no, because like... So then the father came running out and he grabbed his girl and she was unconscious completely. So he took her to the hospital, and in the hospital the doctors were all there, and they took an x-ray, they put her on in the ICU, you know, because they thought, okay, you know, she'd been hit by a truck. They got all the details, what happened. They asked the father and said that she was hit by a truck, you know, traveling at, you know, 40 miles an hour or something, you know. And so then they did the x-ray, and the nurse brought the x-ray to the doctor, and the doctor was looking at the x-ray, and the doctor said, no, this is the wrong x-ray. Can you bring the x-ray for this girl? And the nurse said, it is the x-ray for this girl. And she said, no, there must be something wrong. So he said to the nurse, you go and double check it, you know. So the nurse went to double check it and everything, and they said, no, this is the x-ray. This girl was hit by a massive truck, you know, and there's not even one fracture. He was like, what? You know, he's like, how is this possible, you know? So then in the meantime, the nurses were there in the ICU, and then this girl, she woke up, and then the nurses started asking her, what happened? She said, I can't fully remember what happened, but this big lion came, you know? This big lion came, and he just hugged me, you know? So, and the doctors are saying, how can someone be hit by a truck, you know, that's going fast, and not have even one single fracture, you know? But they did see on her back, like a scratch mark, you know, like claw mark or something. So then the doctor was saying to the father, look, are you sure this was a road accident? Because it looks like maybe she was attacked by an animal or something, you know? So there's some scratch claw marks on the back. Light, you know. So he said, no, I was there, I was watching through the window, you know. So then they asked the girl, and the girl said, oh, yeah. She said, Lord Nrsingadev came, and he hugged me. But she said, my teacher will be angry at him, because he's got very long nails. You know? So actually, she was so devoted to Lord Nrsingadev that actually Lord Nrsingadev protected her, you know, and it was just a miracle. It was just a miracle. It was so amazing, you know. So anyway, there's so many pastimes. So, you know, sometimes when you go into town, you see like people, they put statues there, you know, like that. You know, there's William Peel, or there's Lord Nelson on the in Trafalgar Square and things like that. So people are always saying, oh, you know, you're doing idol worship, you know. So we say, actually, you know, these statues where the pigeons are targeting them all the time, you know, with offerings of stool, you know, that's idol worship, you know. But this is deity worship, you know, where, you know, the Lord is actually, you know, dressed and bathed and fed, and he's reciprocating with his devotees in so many ways, you know. So all the time, this is deity worship. Okay, so some of the qualities that the Brahmins have, and the mood and the sentiment that devotees have, that which allow them to approach the Lord, are very, very interesting. So I've got a couple of verses here. This is from teachings of Queen Kunti. It's a very famous verse. Many of you will know it. It's Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 26. I'm sure Gaura Krishna Prabhu will know it, you know. It's Janmishwarya Shruta Shri Bir Edamana Madapuman Naivarati Bhatum Vae Twamakinchana Gocharam. So this is Queen Kunti. She's speaking. She's saying, my Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. You know? So if one's trying to improve themselves in so many material ways, you know, then sincerity and that of purpose is not there. So One cannot approach the Lord with sincere feeling. Oh my Lord, you can only be approached by those who are materially exhausted. You know? So one doesn't necessarily have to be materially exhausted. If one is very intelligent, then whatever he has, he sees actually it's the Lord's anyway. So he doesn't see it as his. So therefore uses it, you know, like we see like Maharaj Pratra Purudra and so many great, you know, kings had so much power and opulence and wealth. They used it for building beautiful temples, for worshipping the Lord, for doing so many wonderful things. So nothing really belongs to us, you know. So we think, okay, you know, I've got a good bank balance, you know, and, you know, I come from a very aristocratic family, you know, and I look very beautiful, and, you know, I've got, you know, PhD and, you know, so many titles after my name, you know. But actually, what's it all worth? We come empty-handed and we go empty-handed. You know? In fact, we even leave the body behind, you know. So to approach the Lord, then one has to approach him with all sincerity, and it has to be a kinchna gocharam. You know, that means that. So, like we were reading in the previous class, that Prabhupada was there, but Krishna took everything away from him, Prabhupada was laughing because he realized that it's Krishna. You know. So Krishna can give you everything, he can take everything away, but he never takes something away from you without giving you something better in return. You know? So he realized actually whatever Krishna does, it's for our benefit. So sometimes we have, you know, we have our kind of Krishna, you know, we say we pray, I want to be helped in this way, you know. But Krishna will help you, but he'll help you in his way. You know? So man proposes and God disposes. You know? So because if people if they have too much faith in their own material strength or ability and well-being, then it's difficult to approach the Lord with sincere feeling, because you think, well, actually, I'm doing okay, you know. You know, I don't need God, you know. I'm fine, you know. So there's another verse here, and this is from 10th canto, 14th chapter, text number 29, and it's Lord Brahma prays to Lord Krishna. Atapi deva padam bhuja devaya prasad leshanu grihita eva hi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno na chanyo ekopi chiram vichirnam. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the supreme personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So, very deep. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, then he can understand the greatness of your personality. So it's by the mercy of the Lord that we can understand the Lord. You know? So it says, how can you understand the inconceivable? Only by the mercy of the inconceivable. You know? Otherwise, there's two processes. You know, the ascending process is, with our tiny pea brain, you know, we try to work out the whole universe, you know. We gain knowledge that's coming down from above, you know. So they give that example, you know, like if a child, you know, if his father left home when he was just born and he never got to see his father, then he could go to the high street and do an experiment, you know, with a clipboard. He could ask every gentleman he sees, excuse me, are you my father? Are you my father? I'm doing a survey, you know, like that. So he'll be there a long time. Or that's called the ascending process. You're trying to work everything out by your tiny brain. And the descending process means you gain knowledge from an authoritative source, you know. In that case, with this boy, he asked his mother, you know, who's my father? And she can tell him who his father is, because she's the authority in that case. You know? So it's quite simple. So only by the mercy, if we get the favor of the Lord and his pure devotees, then we can gain all the knowledge and the understanding and the benediction. So this next verse, it is from the Padma Puran, and it's Lord Shiva, and he's speaking to his wife, the goddess Durga. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu aradhananam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samacharam. So is it very, this is a lovely verse. It says, Lord Shiva told Goddess Durga, my dear Devi, although the Vedas mention worship of demigods, the worship of Lord Vishnu is topmost and is ultimately recommended. However, above, the worship of Lord Vishnu is the rendering of service to Vaishnavas who are related to Vishnu, tadiyanam samacharan. So he says, out of all different types of worship, you know, there's so many, 33 million demigods, you know. Even if you worship one or two of them, then the other ones are going to be upset with you. Say, well, you worship him, what about me, you know? And they said, but out of all types of worship, the worship of Vishnu is topmost, you know. Param, you know. Vishnu aradhananam param. You know? But he says, but higher than the worship of Lord Vishnu is the worship of the Vaishnava, the devotee of Lord Vishnu. So it says, by rendering service to the Vaishnavas who are related to the Lord, then actually one captures the attention of the Lord. You know? So just like if you meet you know, some very you know, well-to-do, respectable gentleman, so if you go up to him and he'll think, well, who are you? You know, like that. But if you speak to his son, you know, if you give him a sweet or you're nice to his son, then he recognizes you. You know, he's not questioning you then. You know, like that. We have like three things very important. Jiva Doya, Lord Chaitanya is explaining Jiva Doya, that to have compassion to other living entities, so vital to have that understanding, and Vaishnav Seva, Vaishnav, to serve the Vaishnavas, because the Vaishnavas are even more worshipable than the Lord, according to Lord Shiva, you know? And he's supposed to be topmost Vaishnava, you know? So he must know what he's talking about. So, and then Nam Ruchi, you know, that to see the Lord is non-different from his holy name. That chanting the holy name, that actually you're directly in association with the Lord. And then Srinivas Prabhu was saying that in his class, Mahaprasad, Govinda, the holy name, and Vaishnavas. You know? You can't do without them. You know? So we can gain complete perfection, you know. Actually, the process is very, very simple, and we can achieve the perfection of our devotional practices very, very simply. It's simple for the simple, but it's complicated for the complicated. You know, like we were saying, like some people, they say, you just chant Hare Krishna, is that it? You know, isn't there more to it? You know, we say, well, okay, you know, we have this, you know, we have all these volumes of books to ratify, to explain that it's just chant Hare Krishna. So, you know, we have all this philosophy and everything, but actually, for the simple, they're very simple. They're very happy to just perform simple devotional service. They're happy to serve the Vaishnavas. They're happy to chant the holy name. They're happy to take Mahaprasad. They're happy to share this Krishna bhakti with others, and they're happy and they're making advancement like anything. But then there's some are like, you know, they have this what they call armchair philosophers, you know, And that, you know, they sit in their armchairs and they try to put the world to right, you know, with their mental gymnastics, you know. So, but it's, you know, it's simple for the simple. So, I'm going to read something interesting that I found. Let's see where it is. Okay, so okay, get the right one. So Krishna, he is accused of being a thief, you know. So normally thieves are punished, you know. So if I steal something, then I'll get into trouble. If Mohan or Sam steal something, then Sutapa will want to have a word with them, you know, and but when Krishna steals, then he is glorified, you know. So how is this, you know? Why are they? What's going on, you know? So it's some verses, a song by Shila Bilva Mangal Thakur. And if you remember, Bilva Mangal Thakur, he was in a very degraded condition. He used to go and see prostitutes and things, and he was very attached, materially attached. But then one time, there was a big storm, and, you know, the prostitute thought, well, he'll never come anyway, it's too dangerous, you know. But somehow he made it. So she thought, wow, you know, this guy's got determination. You know? So she chastised him. She said, you know, you put so much endeavor into coming to see me, you risked your life, you know, in the middle of the night, in the middle of the storm. If you had, you know, even a bit of that determination to achieve the Supreme, you would have achieved him by now. So she really chastised him, and he felt like, my God, you know. So he felt so bad, he thought, well, okay, forget this, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to look for God, you know. So then he was going towards Vrindavan, but then he became lusty again. And then he became so disheartened with himself, you know, that this is not recommended, by the way, you know, like he plucked his eyes out, you know. And then he carried on to Vrindavan, and he was sitting there in Vrindavan under a tree, and he was praying and chanting. But then Krishna came as a young cowherd boy, and he said, you know, I've seen that you haven't eaten anything. And he said, in my village, nobody goes hungry, you know. So then he brought this milk for Bilva Mangal Thakur. And then he was offering him. And then Bilva Mangal Thakur was thinking, oh, who is this? Who is this sweet boy? Because I can't see him. He says, but he seems charming. So then he tried to grab his hand. And Krishna, he got away, you know. He said, oh, I'll be late. My mother will be angry. So then Bilva Mangal Thakur said, okay, you might escape the grasp of my hand, but you will never escape from my heart. You know? So this is a song. It's called the Chor Ashtakam. I'll just read a couple of the verses from it. Then if you want, you can look it up later. Chor Ashtakam. So it's Vraje Prasidham Navanita Choram Gopanganam Chadukula Choram Aneka Janma Jeta Papa Choram Chora Gara Ganam Purusham Namami. So the translation for the first verse is very beautiful. It says, I offer my respectful obeisances to that foremost of thieves. Who is famous in Vraja as the butter thief, and he who steals the gopis' clothes, and who, for those who take shelter of him, steals the sins which have accrued over many lifetimes. So, really, really beautiful. So, Krishna is known as the butter thief, and he stole the gopis' clothes, and then he climbed up a tree, and he was doing all this mischief, you know. And he not only steals the gopis' clothes and butter, but sometimes when we go visiting people, you know, we were giving them to this Krishna fridge magnets. So we're saying, like, you know, you better be careful, because this boy doesn't only steal butter, He's been known to steal people's hearts. So you better be careful. And they say, some people say, oh, I'm happy to let him steal my heart, you know. And the butter in my fridge, you know. So he's saying like, wow. For those who take shelter of him, he steals the sins which have accrued over many lifetimes. You know? And then the next verse is, Sri Radhikaya Ridayasya Choram Navam Buddha Shyamala Kanti Choram Pradishitanam Cha Samasta Choram Chora Gara Ganyam Purusham Namami. So read the translation. I offer my respectful obeisances to the foremost of thieves who steals Srimati Radharani's, Srimati Radhika's heart, who steals the dark luster of the fresh rain cloud, and who steals all the sins and sufferings of those who take shelter of his lotus feet. I'll read that bit again. I offer my respectful obeisances to the foremost of thieves, who steals Srimati Radhika's heart, who steals the dark luster of the fresh rain cloud, and who steals all the sins and sufferings of those who take shelter of his feet. So really, really powerful. So sometimes we're thinking, oh, you know, why am I suffering so much, you know? You know, why am I in mental and physical anguish, you know? You know, and, you know, why are all my desires not being fulfilled, you know? But actually, all we need to do is actually surrender to Krishna and let him steal all our sins of past lifetimes and surrender to him in the mood of the gopis. You know? So I read the other day that Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. So he sent him to take a message to the gopis, but there was also another reason why he sent him, because he felt Uddhava was a little bit proud, because, you know, he was the disciple of Gargamuni. Oh, Brihaspati. He was the disciple of Brihaspati, so he was very learned, you know. So, you know, sometimes when you learn a lot of shlokas and you know a bit, then sometimes it can go to your head. So Uddhava was, I mean, he was amazing. But so Krishna said, okay, send him to Vrindavan. He can take the message, but at the same time, I'll send him to Vrindavan, because when he meets the gopis and he sees their devotion, that will humble his pride, you know. So when Uddhava went there and he saw the devotion of these gopis, you know, that they weren't learned scholars and they weren't yogis and, you know, they didn't recite all these verses and things, but they had so much love for Krishna that they didn't care about their own happiness. They said, you know, whatever pleases Krishna, whether it pleases us or not, there's no question, we will do that, you know. So Krishna and Balaram, they sent the cowherd boys to the yajnik Brahmins who were performing yajna sacrifices. And they said, you know, can we have some food, you know? So the Brahmins were saying, look, you know, don't bother us now. We're trying to satisfy Vishnu. But it was Vishnu, Krishna, who sent them. You know? So sometimes they say, you can't see the wood for the trees, you know. So they said, no, don't bother us now. Go, you know. So they came, the cowherd boys came back to Krishna and Balaram and said, look, you know, these Brahmins, the smarter Brahmins, they know all these verses, doing all these yajnas, and they said, oh, they don't want to be bothered because they're trying to please Vishnu. So they said, okay, go to the wives of the Brahmins, because they're very simple, you know, and they're not so complicated. So they have, you know, very simple devotion. So the cowherd boys went to the wives of the Brahmins and they said, Krishna and Balaram and the other cowherd boys are hungry, you know. So they say, oh, you know, fantastic. So they've got all the food together and say, look, not only will we give you food, we'll come as well. So they're completely, so simple heart surrender. That's why they can capture Krishna. So Uddhava, he got the message after meeting the gopis. And then afterwards he said, I want to be, of course, just behind Kusum Sarovra, where Govardhan Hill is, there's Uddhava Kund, and then he resides there, Uddhava deity is there. But he also resides there. He said, I want to reside as grass in Vrindavan, because then all the gopis and all the devotees, the dust from their feet will be on my head. You know? And then he lost his pride. So anyway, there's so many amazing, beautiful pastimes are there. And the Krishna comes to enact these pastimes to soften our heart and to attract us to his eternal realm. You know? Otherwise, if we don't hear and chant and remember these pastimes, then we are captivated by so many other pastimes of the material world. You know? And those pastimes are dead end. You know, everyone's trying to be number one. You know, but actually, they just end up being frustrated. You know, we've seen in the lives of so many people. You know, like I was just remembering, like Michael Jackson, for example. You know, he was so wealthy, so famous. He had everything going for him. You know, and he had like so many girls that were running after him, and he had so many mansions and everything. But you know, he was so dissatisfied, you know. He was so unhappy. He had to take so many drugs just to keep himself, you know, going, you know. So, and eventually he died from those things. So, you see, so many people like that. Elvis Presley, you know, he died on the toilet, you know, like a drug overdose, you know. So, I think so. The thing that the natural happiness, so if we don't get our happiness from reading and chanting and associating and absorbing in the pastimes, from serving the devotees, from serving the spiritual master and seeing the beautiful forms of the lordships and all the transcendental connections, if we don't get our happiness from there, then to the degree that we don't get happiness from the transcendental platform, to that degree we'll look for that happiness from the material platform. So when you're chanting a japa, if you don't get absorbed, you don't hear, then during that day or the next few days, you'll look for some material gratification because it'll have to be fulfilled somehow. So either fulfill it spiritually, there's unlimited, you know, unlimited transcendental nectar, you know, or we have to look for it somewhere else. You know? So that's how the equation works. You know? So anyway, I think I've rambled on long enough. I think I better stop there. So if there's any questions, any comments, or any corrections, and that will be... is that Mohan?
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Gurjrama, for that really inspiring class.
Are you sure it wasn't perspiring?
No, it was really inspiring. That's why I had a reflection and I thought to share that reflection. It was based on Sankirtan, actually. And the reflection I had was that, you see, oftentimes the obvious is not really obvious for us. So what I wanted to share here is that there was an experiment done in Africa. And it was one particular civilization of an African tribe. Yeah. And this experiment was that they were given this variety of colors and they were asked to name those colors.
Okay.
And they were able to name all of those colors until they came to a slight shade of green. And when they came to that slight shade of green, they couldn't actually name it green. They didn't know what it was. So my reflection was, I was like, while you were talking about Sankirtan, is that, you know, civilization is very socially conditioned, very socially pressured. You know, it's like everyone, they see something bad, and so it's like actually what Sutapa Prabhu was saying in one class. It's like if two people believe in the same thing, even if the third person doesn't believe in it, they're pressured into believing in it. And so we can look at that and we can take that and we can realize that actually nothing in this world is permanent. Everything has had a beginning and everything will come to an end. Particularly when we look at language and when we look at perspective. You know, a few hundreds of years ago, we didn't know that certain things were certain colors, black, you know, we didn't have name for certain objects or for certain things, and now we do. So when we realize that, then we can also realize that our consciousness is very contaminated. And so therefore, you know, when we look at certain person, the way they're dressed, it's not that, you know, oh, they're a bad person. It's just how we've been socially conditioned to see things and to believe things. And then when we realize how socially conditioned we are and how contaminated our consciousness is, then the next thing is, okay, what's the solution? And the solution is that, you know, reading, chanting, and hearing, particularly hearing, because I was just having this meditation that even our chanting, especially when you're in the neophyte stage, when you're in the beginning stage, yes, you're chanting, and it's not always easy, but that's why this process has also given us the opportunity to hear from saints, to hear from classes, to hear from lectures. By hearing, we become purified, and then we can wipe the dust of contamination from the mirror, and then we can see things more clearly, and then we can see that, yes, you know, the Paramatma is within every living entity. Yes, equal vision is important. Yes, that person may be dressed in a way that seems externally negative, but I know that's only my perspective limiting me. And in reality, that person is a spirit soul just like we all are, and he deserves a chance to be given a book or to be given your time so that you can have a conversation with him. So it's really deep, actually, civilization and social.
Yeah, we become conditioned by so many things, you know. We're conditioned by, the environment we've been brought up in, you know, the type of area that we lived, you know, the culture our parents followed, you know, what our friends did, what kind of clothes they wore, and the food they ate, and we may not be aware of it, we're influenced by everything around us. We're a product of our environment, you know. So if the environment is Kali Yuga, you know, then we are Kali Yuga specimens, you know. But Srila Prabhupada has come to actually give us real connection, our real identity, you know. And that real identity is Jiva Krishna Das Evishwas Tole Adukhanaya. That if we remember that the spirit soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, then no more troubles remain. Because all these other things, you know, are designations that we become affected by, but actually nothing to do with us. So it's just, you know, you can support one football team, you know, and say, oh, we're into this Liverpool or something like that. But then, you know, later on you might become a Manchester United fan, you know, like that. And woe betide, yeah, like that. You know, so the thing is, these are all superficial. They're not. Are you a Manchester United fan? Yeah, you normally do.
thanks, Gajo Mahaprabhu. So, enlivened class.
Once the devotee was saying to me, I'm conditioned. You know, because I can't do this because I'm conditioned. I said, okay, you're talking about conditioning. Let's take it all the way back to your original conditioning. What's your original condition? He said, I'm the eternal spirit soul servant of Krishna. I said, okay, if you want to do conditioning, let's take it all the way back.
Very nice, Prabhu. I was, you know, in devotional life, devotional service trumps every all of that conditioning thing. Like and devotees, actually, they might be able to they'll understand this because when I look at you, it's funny thing. It's not, I don't see an Indian of Indian origin.
No, I'm born in Africa.
Yeah, but then and I look at Gwakrishna Prabhu. I don't see him as a white person. He doesn't look white to me.
No, he's been out in the sun.
But no, the thing is, in devotional life, that's the best thing that we could ever engage in. And this is really the solution for the world. Because the conditioning thing is so deep, it's incredible, it's so difficult to get rid of, unless we actually engage in some sort of process like devotional service, where you see things truly as they are, spirit soul. I remember as you were talking about conditioning and people how they judge, how we judge, and we better be careful that this doesn't creep in our community, in spiritual life, you know, because it's so easy based on our conditioning. I remember I think it was Switzerland some years ago. I don't know who heard of Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
Okay. And she went to Switzerland to visit. She was a wedding there of a famous person, and she went into a store, and this lady, this Swiss woman, was serving. It was a very elegant place. And she said, can I have that bag?
Yeah.
Can I, you know? And she said, no, you can't afford it. No. Oprah Winfrey is one of the richest person in the world.
Yeah, but she's a black American body.
Exactly. And the thing is, it was a terrible blunder. It was a terrible thing. Yeah. It caused a whole media sensation. Just to tell you just how how terrible this thing, this conditioning. You're looking at the person in front of you, one of the richest person, and you're saying that you can't afford a handbag. You know, it's so silly. So we have to be careful these things don't creep into us in devotional life. So we should see things equally.
So the thing is, the more we actually take solidly to devotional practices, and we study the scriptures, we chant, we serve, and then all these conditionings will be removed. Then we'll be able to see everyone as spirit soul, regardless of externals. You know? Otherwise, to the degree that we don't take shelter of the process of bhakti, to that degree, we will have some misgivings on those other things. You know?
Thank you.
Okay. Prabhuji. Go ahead. You want to say something? Go ahead.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your class. Just a question. You said that when we try and aim for for getting opulence, like trying to get wealthy, trying to look beautiful, trying to, you know, get these opulences, be famous and things.
Janma Ishwarya Shruta Shribir, yeah.
Yeah, it's harder for us to sincerely come to Krishna. But renunciation is also an opulence. So I was wondering if you could speak about that.
Yeah, it is an opulence, but like, say, if you have nothing, then it's hard to get puffed up about it, you know, in one sense. I mean, it's like, if you have nothing, then you generally can be more humble. But of course, some people, they even get proud of their nothing, you know. So, it's like, generally, if you meet people who don't have very much, generally, you can approach them quite easily. You know, people who have a lot and have things going for them, you know, they have all their security and they have all the things. Well, who are you? You know, so the renunciation, that is an opulence. Actually, Krishna has everything and he's not attached to it. You know, so that's real opulence. So I don't know how to explain it. The thing is, if you have, materially, if you don't have anything, but you have Krishna, you have everything. Because Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. If you have the source of everything, you have everything. But otherwise, you can have everything, but you don't have Krishna, you have nothing. You know? So, yeah, sometimes people even get proud. The pauper is proud of his penny, you know, like that. They get like, oh, you know, look at me, I'm so... But actually... There's attachment there, so they become attached to that, so they're not fully renounced. Okay. Anyway, thank you so much for your patience and your time, and it's always breakfast time now. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam ki, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Maharaj ki, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki, Vaishnav Sangha Vaishnav Seva Ki. Nitai Gaur Premanande Haribol.